This episode of the Deck Tees Podcast is brought to you by Gathering Magic and CoolStuffInc.com. Become a part of their customer rewards program when you make any purchase and receive discounts on all future orders. That is CoolStuffInc.com. Welcome to episode 122 of the Deck Tees Podcast. I am your host, Erin Campbell. My guest tonight is a smart and sassy siren from San Francisco, California, whose interests include animals, cosplay, and of course, Magic the Gathering. She is Catanomia. Hello.
Hi. Wow, what an intro.
hopefully I did you justice.
Oh, 100%. Sassy siren. I like that.
Yeah, you know, I try really hard not to focus just on people's appearances, because you are a beautiful girl, but I've also gotten a chance to get to know you a little bit through Twitter, and you're also very lovely and very smart, so I wanted to make sure that I gave you credit on all of those things.
Wow, thank you.
Absolutely, absolutely. I've wanted you on the show for a while, because like I said, we have talked a little bit on Twitter. I've gotten to see your work and how you are in the community, and I just wanted to make sure that I did you justice, because you have a very interesting career.
Yes.
That I feel like it would be very easy to either exploit or judge or just be very ignorant about, and I just wanted to make sure that I showed you the proper respect in that regard. So I really feel like now is a good time to have you on and to do that right. So thank you for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I'm honored to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if I understand this correctly, you grew up in Dallas, Texas, and you're a country girl.
Yes.
Okay. All right. So tell me a little bit about that.
Well, I moved to San Diego when I was pretty young, actually, but I spent all of my summers going back to Texas to spend time with my family. And I just have to say that sending a child to Texas only in the summer is the worst possible idea because it is so hot.
Which is interesting because you live in California now. So it's not like you moved to Minnesota or anything.
No, and I joke because I tell people that California doesn't even have weather. And Texas summers are just miserable. Most of my childhood memories involve me not wanting to go outside and play.
So now you said something very interesting. So you said that you moved to San Diego or San Francisco very early on, mm-hmm. but you kept going back to Dallas. So
yes.
Did you have family in each state? Like, how did that work?
My mom and I moved to San Diego together, and the rest of my family is still in Texas. So my dad, like a million sets of grandparents. So I would just be passed back and forth between all of them during the summertime.
Are you close to your family?
I'm very close to my family. I love my family.
Mm-hmm. And so if I understand this correctly, you came from a blended family, like your parents were separated?
Yes.
Okay, so tell me about your siblings.
I have so many siblings. Okay, so my mom had me and my younger sister. She's 7 years younger than me, and she's my best friend in the whole wide world. We are super close. My dad went on to have two more children, and my mom's husband has four children of his own. Mm-hmm. So I have very, very many siblings.
And do you remember the split at all? Like, did it affect you at all?
Nope. I was very young when it happened, so I was, as far as I'm concerned, my mom has been the only constant in my life, really.
Mm-hmm. It's interesting because I know I grew up from a different family. I didn't know my real dad. My mom was a single mom who worked two jobs. And, you know, I didn't speak to my extended family because they were very conservative. And, you know, they viewed my mom and I as sort of the black sheep. So I have a lot of respect for families that are, you know, unconventional. Mm-hmm. I definitely think there's something to be said for the, you know, the blood versus water argument where, you know, if water's doing something for you, it's because they don't have to. You know, they're doing it because they really love you.
Right.
So I love seeing, you know, all sorts of families with either blended families or two moms or one dad. You know, I think I love seeing people sort of defy that stereotype.
Oh, yeah, 100%. It's the love that makes it work.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I feel like people forget about that sometimes. Mm-hmm. So what was it like growing up in Dallas? Like, what were you like as a kid?
I was a little firecracker. I was so happy and so friendly and just best friends with everyone, and it drove my mom nuts because I'd always come up, my friend this, my friend that, and she'd be like, what did I tell you about talking to strangers? And be like, no, mom, that's not a stranger, that's my friend. And she'd go, yeah, what's your friend's name? And I'd have no clue. So I was friendly. I wasn't shy at all.
You said something before about your mom making you verify their address.
Yes. She told me that they weren't my friend unless I knew their address, but I didn't even know my own address, so that argument fell flat real fast.
And what were your interests growing up? Like, were you into games and geeky things at an early age?
Well, I got grounded all the time, so books were my favorite thing.
Did you have any favorite books or series you enjoyed reading?
Basically, if it was fantasy, I was really into it. But Tamora Pierce is my favorite childhood author, and I still read her books if she comes out with new ones.
Okay. See, I was the kid that read The Babysitter's Club and The Boxcar Children.
Ah, I never read those.
Yeah, I didn't come into my geekiness until much later, and then I started reading the Star Trek books, and
Oh, there you go.
then I started reading Anne McCaffrey and the Dragon books, and yeah, when
Yes.
it hit me pretty hard. So, so now, what were you like in school? Like, did you continue to be into nerdy things?
Oh yeah, I was obsessed with Pokemon. That was my gateway drug into all things geek. You know, I liked the cards, I liked the show. I liked if it was Pokemon, I liked it. I had the Game Boy games. And then I got into anime. I got into Magic when I was 12. In high school, I got into all the RPGs, starting with Vampire the Masquerade.
Vampire.
Yes. And I loved Vampire so much that I would have our storyteller come over to my house and pester him to do one-on-one campaigns with me.
I used to read the books for fun. In fact, I still have all of the books, but I used to go to, I don't know if you have Half Price Books where you are.
Yeah.
And I used to go to their gaming section, and they would have all of the clan books for, like, half off or whatever. And I would read the clan books for clans that I had no interest in playing. Like, I would read the Gangrel clan book, and then we would actually get to play, and then somebody would be playing that clan, and they would make some horrible mistake, and I'd be like, "That's not what the Gangrel Antediluvian meant." And
Oh, you didn't just imply that you had no interest in playing Gangrel, did you?
I may have.
Oh, no.
Were you a Gangrel fan?
I was such a Gangrel
Oh
fan.
man, I was a Giovanni fan.
Ah,
Yeah, so we're both
okay.
independents, though. That's a good thing.
Yeah.
That's a good thing. But yeah,
Nice.
my troop used to call me the sponge because I would read the books and I would reread the books and I would read them for fun because that's just how nerdy I was. And I could tell you about the history of the Malkavian clan, and
Oh,
I couldn't tell you
yes.
about the history of America, but I could tell you about where Malkav was in 1323 and all of that. So now, when we were growing up back then, I feel like that was a time where, being nerdy might have gotten you picked on or might have gotten you ostracized. So were you one of the outsiders, or were you one of the cool kids who just happened to be into nerdy things?
I was somewhere in the middle. I got picked on a little bit in middle school, but it wasn't anything traumatizing. I'm really good at just ignoring people when they're being assholes. So it never got to me too badly. And I guess because I didn't really react, it never got worse. In high school, I was a theater kid, so that completely solved that issue. We're
Theater.
just chill, yeah.
Oh my goodness. Are we talking plays or musicals?
Both.
Oh man.
Yes.
What were you in?
Oh, so many things. Pippin, South Pacific, Romeo and Juliet, Seussical the Musical, Bat Boy, Anne of Green Gables,
Wow.
Aida, A Midsummer Night's Dream, City of Angels, Rosencrantz and Guildenstern Are Dead, Picasso at the La Pinacoteca,
Oof.
A Midsummer Night's Dream again.
That's quite a resume. Wow.
Yes.
Do you still sing? Can you still sing?
I do still sing, not as much, not as good as I was in college when I was actually studying it. I've let myself go a little bit, but it's still something I love, so I don't think I'll ever quit.
I'm actually looking forward to the last 5 years.
Oh, yes.
Yeah,
I'm
they're
really
making.
excited about that.
I didn't know it was a musical. One of
Yes.
my friends, we have this tradition because a lot of my friends and I are still single. We go out for Valentine's Day because we don't want to be the sad, sorry singles. So we go
Right.
out and have a good time. And I the trailer came out a couple months ago, and one of my friends had linked it to us on Facebook, and she was like, "This is what we need to see on Valentine's Day." And when I first saw it, I was like, "I don't want to see some happy couple to, like, just sit through the trailer." And I was like, "Okay." And then I'm like, Why is she cr Oh, this isn't a happy movie, is it?
No.
And she's like, no. And then once I started listening to the songs, and once I realized that Jamie was an asshole, and then I was like, yeah, we should really go see this movie. So we're gonna go see The Last 5 Years on Valentine's Day, and I've been listening to the soundtrack, and one of my favorite musicals ever is Evita.
I haven't seen that.
Yeah, Evita had, struck a personal chord with me. I remember my mom and I listening to it on repeat, during rides to school, which was
Oh.
foreshadowing for my queer status, but yeah, that's one of those movies where I can still watch it, or even one of those soundtracks, and it just resonates with me, and I love that. So I have a bit of a theater nerd in me too, although I wasn't in any of them.
Yay, I'll take
Yeah, yeah.
it.
So what about acting, interested you? Like, what got you started in that?
Well, I decided I wanted to be an actor when I was like 3 or 4, and here you're gonna think I'm a horrible person, is because I was trying to figure out what I wanted to be when I grew up, and actor starts with the letter A, so it was gonna be the first thing I tried. And lo and behold, I ended up really loving it.
Now, was there a part of you, like, did you like being the attention or being in the spotlight?
I'm actually very shy. I hate being in the spotlight,
And yet
but.
you wanted to be an actor.
Yeah, I know. For some reason, when I get on stage, all of that kind of melts away, and I can just slip into my role, and I don't get stage fright. I get that little buzz of adrenaline, and it's addicting, and it's fun and exciting,
Do you think that them
energizing.
Do you think that there might have been like a little bit of, you mentioned, slipping into a personality and then also being shy. Like, was there a part of it that interested you where you got to sort of be somebody else, where you weren't that shy girl anymore? You could be, the temptress, or the movie star, or the good girl. You could be any one of those roles and still be yourself.
There is a certain amount of that. And also, I love characterization. I mean, I'm a role player, and sometimes my favorite part of role playing is character creation. So I love people. I love getting in their heads, learning what makes them tick, understanding their psyche. So stepping into and just experiencing different people is just super fun. Plus, I
And
get to do things that you don't get to do in real life.
right. And like, how serious were you about the acting? Like, was that going to be, did you go to college for it or anything?
I did. I went to college to study musical theater, but they dropped my program, so
That's terrible.
it was kind of sad.
So I want to go back to magic for a second. You said you discovered magic at 12 years old.
Yes.
How did that happen?
Well, lunchtime back then wasn't that exciting for me. I had a couple of guy friends, and I would basically sit on a ledge and watch them play hacky sack because I couldn't play hacky sack. One day, one of them was just like, "Hey, I want to teach you this game." And I was a little skeptical at first because it seemed really complicated, but I ended up falling in love with it, so.
And it's as simple as that.
Yeah.
Do you think that there now magic can be a bit of a social game? You do have to look across from your opponent, you have to communicate with them. How did you deal with that being a shy person?
It was basically acted as an icebreaker for me because I was just like, "Hey, here's something we have in common. We have at least one thing we can talk about." So it definitely helped me in social situations. Although
Yeah.
I get nervous if I go to large events where there's tons of people. I'm not very good in crowds yet.
It's so interesting that you would say that. Like, so I just keep thinking of all of these factors in your life. You were the excited little girl who made friends with everybody, and then you were the theater star, and now a little bit of what you do in your career. You seem to always find yourself around people, yet you're so shy. That's so interesting to me.
It's very strange. I don't really
It kind
understand
of
it myself.
reminds me of that metaphor of, people sometimes say that they can be in a crowd full of people and still feel alone. Like,
Yes.
sometimes you just want to be around people, but you don't necessarily want to interact with them.
Oh yeah. I mean, there would be plenty of times where I don't want to be alone, so I would go to a place with people and I just read.
Yeah.
Like, don't talk to me, but let me be around this happy energy. Just don't come near me.
Sure. And I admit that I made a little bit of a boo-boo when I advertised that you were coming on the show. I was under the impression that you really, really liked EDH, but apparently you're really into limited.
Yes.
Okay, and why is that?
I really like deck building. And there's something extra exciting about getting this small amount of cards and being told, go, make the thing. Make a good thing out of this. And it's just fun. It's always a little bit different. So.
And your fiance plays magic as well, right? Okay,
Yes.
and what is he into?
He likes a lot of the older formats. You know, he likes legacy and vintage and modern and more than anything else.
Okay, and do you two play together? Do you play well together?
Oh, we play wonderfully together. The two of us on a two-headed giant team are fairly unstoppable.
I'm so glad to hear that. I've made the comment on my show a number of times where, you know, back in the day when couples would get married, they had to do some form of counseling where they would either meet with their pastor or they would go get blood tests or something. And my friend Hallie and I were talking one time on my show, and we were like, you know, if a couple's thinking of getting married, they should play two-headed giant together, and that should be the deciding factor, because there are some couples who can do it really, really well, and they communicate, and they're like a well-oiled machine. And you have those couples that just sort of melt down in front of you, where like you can tell things aren't going very well and it just all comes apart.
Well, we fight like a married couple, but damn it, we're gonna win.
I know there's always those couples where, you know, you're with your opponent and all of a sudden their issues start to seep into the game. So the guy might be like, you know, you drink all my milk, and she'll be like, and you threw away my pajamas, and you're not sure whether you should intervene or you should just watch it happen.
Just grab some popcorn.
Right. I think that's something every couple needs to do, where it's like, you know, yeah, we just weren't meant to be. How did you know? We couldn't two-headed giant. So
We don't find that bad. We'll
that's
do
good to hear.
things where I'll ask him what he's planning, and he'll be like, "Shh, just trust me." And I'll be like, "You know, you need to explain this because I have that feeling that you're gonna do something really stupid." And if he doesn't explain it to me, 9 times out of 10, he ends up doing something really stupid. So.
See, I think that's an important trait for couples, you know, to sort of be that checkpoint where it's like, you know, because I think I see it far too often in couples where they just sort of let them go, where, you know, it's like, oh, he's going to be stupid, I'm just going to sit back and laugh. And I think it's more important to be that spouse that's like, baby, good
Take a few
job.
step back.
Yeah. I think that's
Communication is the most important thing.
absolutely. And like I think that says more about a partner when you're willing to have those conversations. So
Yes.
like I remember when Jerry Thompson a couple years ago dyed his hair blonde, and it was like some weird Cupid ramen thing, and he won like an invitational or something, and I remember he like dedicated it to his girlfriend, and I remember this part of me going, why didn't she stop you from dyeing your hair like that? And I'm just imagining this girl going, go baby, go win the invitation. No, if that were me, I'd be like, girl, you are not going into a feature match with that ramen noodle her. We're not, no. And I just remember watching that coverage and being like, she must not love you very much. Like, and that's why Jerry has me blocked on Twitter. So you go from being, you know, you want to be an actor, you go from being a theater nerd, you go to college for it. Unfortunately, you know, that program stops. And then you move on to animal work. Is that true?
Yes.
All right, so tell me about that. How did that happen?
Well, I was trying to be a model and I needed a day job.
Okay.
So I applied to PetSmart because they were trying to hire a dog trainer. And I'm a cat person. I had no experience with dogs at all. But somehow I got hired and I ended up learning so much that I fell completely in love with it. And I ended up going to webinars and seminars and all these different classes to learn more and more about it. And my boss would let me do this. When I was working the register at PetSmart, I would read dog training books so that I can just keep learning more and more and more. And the more I learned about animal psychology, and not just dogs, but I learned to train cats and rats. And I also did work at a local wildlife hospital as well. And the more I learned about animal psychology, the more fascinated with it I become.
And what is it about it that you enjoy so much?
I click with animals a lot more than I do with people. And I like being able to give them a voice. Because they really do try and communicate with us, and they really are intelligent, feeling, and just amazing. And humans just don't always understand the language. And so I would always tell my students that it wasn't a training class, it was a communication class. You know, we're not trying to create slave robots. We have to bridge that communication gap. And they really do have a lot to say, and it fascinates me. I remember when I was working at the wildlife hospital. They told me to go feed the crows, and I'd never been trained to work with the crows before. And I told them that. I was like, I have no clue how to do that. And her response was, "Don't worry, they'll teach you." And they
Wow.
did. I walked into the crow enclosure, and one of the crows just walked right up to the food bowl, and he looked down, and he looked at me, and he looked down, and he looked at me, and I was like, "Okay, I'll clean the food bowl." And then he walked over to the little mealworm bowl, and he looked down, and he looked at me. So I'm like, all right, we'll give you some mealworms. And he did the same with the water bowl. And they would play tricks on me. Like, I would turn around and they'd follow behind me, really sneaky. And then I'd turn and look at them. And they'd look up in the other direction, like, nope, I wasn't doing anything. And they're just, animals are so expressive.
Are you a nurturing person? Like, is that something you enjoy in the work, that you're saving animals and you're treating them well?
I'm very nurturing towards animals. I'm definitely less nurturing towards humans, but with animals, especially kittens, I get so protective of my kittens. Like, if you want to pet my kitten, you're gonna wash your hands. I'm gonna watch you like a hawk the entire time. So.
Yeah, I really feel like, we need more people like you out there, because you see so many stories every day of animals just being treated so poorly. Where I remember a story I read about the other day, a few weeks ago, I think it was in Scotland or England, where somebody left their dog in a train station with a suitcase and just peaced out. And it attracted the attention of the local news and national news, and they managed to track down the owner. And the owner basically was like, the dog didn't look like it was advertised, so I didn't want it. And it was a beautiful dog. Like, it wasn't some, hideous thing. Not that that would have made it right, but, for that to be the reason, like, you just abandon this dog. And, you wouldn't do that with a baby, and you wouldn't do that with your partner because they changed their appearance. And there was this outpouring of money and support, and the dog is in a really happy place now. But, you just see people adopting so capriciously, they just don't think about it.
Yeah, and I 100% believe that people should have to take a class before they even are able to adopt, because there's so much that a lot of people don't realize. You know, you're taking a living, breathing animal into your house that has emotions and a personality, and it's not going to be perfect, and it is going to be work, and it is going to cost money. And a lot of people just, they don't think about that. All they think is, oh, it's a stuffed animal. But I mean, it's not, it's a toddler.
Yeah, and you also hear it sometimes when it comes down to breeders, and you hear these horrible stories of, like, puppy mills and things like that.
Oh,
When
yeah.
you could just be going to your humane society, you could be going where they really could use the homes. And it's just there's just so many, bad stories you hear about that, and they really don't deserve it.
No.
So.
Puppy mills make me very angry.
Yeah, I don't, I admit that I don't fully understand them. Like, I know that they're bad and I know that they're wrong, but I haven't really quite grasped just how bad they are, and part of me
Right.
doesn't want to know, but
There's a certain amount of it that you have to see for yourself in order to even comprehend how bad they are. And working in rescue and working in the training community, I've seen so many horror stories. I mean, my fiance could tell you, I'll come home and I'll just be raging because of the story that I heard, sometimes from clients, sometimes from customers. And the thing that really keeps me going is the fact that I can help some of that.
So how many animals of your own do you have?
I have six.
Six animals.
Yes.
What are we looking at here? What do you have?
Two dogs, two cats, two rats.
Okay, and what are their names?
So I have a Norwegian elk hound named Little Bear.
Okay.
I have an Akita named Hikari, the Twilight Guardian. Yes, she's named after a magic card. Four out of my six animals are magic cards.
Nice.
So I have a cat named Jitter. He's my other non-magic card animal. And then I have a cat named Tamiyo. And my rats are Joyra
Oh my goodness.
and Sidisi.
How do you keep them all coexisting happily?
It's not too hard. The Akita, she's super chill and laid back. I mean, most of the time I would not recommend bringing an Akita into a house with small animals because they do tend to have a very high prey drive. But this Akita, she'll just roll over on her back and completely ignore the cats. My other dog, he does like to herd them. So if they run, he'll chase, but he won't hurt them. The cats are actually mostly afraid of the rats.
Interesting.
Yeah, so I'll let the rats run around, and the cats will go up to try say hi, and the rats will run them off.
Oh man. And are there plans for more, or is this
I hope this is it. I was planning on just four pets, just four. And then I felt bad. I was like, oh, I think my rat's really lonely because they're actually very social creatures. And I didn't feel like I could give her as much time as she probably needed. So of course we had to get her a friend. And oh, my dog, I feel like he would just have so much more fun if he had another dog to play with. So of course we had to get him a friend.
He followed me home. Can I keep him?
I'm lucky that my fiance is lenient enough to let me bring animals into the house, but also firm enough that when I ask him, "Oh, but baby, what if we just got a little goat?" he'll tell me no.
That's good. That's important. I can see. I was wondering if he would be the type of person where you would bring an animal home and he wouldn't even ask. He'd be like, "Yeah," but it seems like he's keeping it in check.
He's pretty good. I mean, that is how we got Tamio. My coworker found her and her sister in a tree stump when they were 2 weeks old, and
A
she
tree
brought them to
stump.
me. Yeah. And their eyes had just barely opened, and she's like, "They're gonna die." And I was like, "Oh, I'll keep them." And I didn't even tell him. He came to pick me up from work, and I just had these kittens, and I'm like, "Hey, baby." Her sister unfortunately ended up passing away, but her name was Mary. Another magic card.
Yes, and very, very applicable to cats too.
Yes. Yeah, and
That's
she was
good.
all black, so.
So that was like Mary the Cursed.
Oh yeah. And then she died, so I guess
Oh,
that was probably a bad idea.
man. I wish you would have had a cat named like Crovax. You could have had like the whole Weatherlight crew at one point,
Yes.
And this is Selenia, and this is Hannah, and I would totally do that. So in addition to your animal work, we've talked about your career and that it's very interesting. So you are a sex worker.
Yes.
That is the politically correct term for it. How do you describe what you do?
I primarily make a living through webcam modeling. I specialize in BDSM and fetish fantasy scenes. And I advertise myself as a switch, so I can be a dominant, I can be a submissive, whatever, pretty much whatever you want to be. I don't actually have that many limits. As long as it's not too messy for my bed, then we're pretty good to go.
Now, are you okay with the term cam girl? Is that appropriate?
Yeah, I'm cool with that.
Just wanted to make sure. So how did you get started doing this?
Oh, well, this is a story. So, I mean, I started out modeling. As I mentioned before, that was how I got started into dog training, was I needed a day job for modeling. And at first, I was very, I'm like, okay, I don't do nudity, but I'm too short for fashion, so that kind of it limited my options a bit. And I ended up doing glamour, and I ended up doing lingerie, and I thought that was really fun. I was like, wow, this is great. And I ended up, then I started doing implied nudity, and then I started doing artistic nudity, and then it just kind of continued on from there. And I have a really good friend in the industry, and she would always talk about her work, and I knew a lot of other sex workers, and I would talk to them about their work. And this friend ended up kind of being my mentor as I started taking little tiny steps. So I'm a really cautious person by nature, and I figured if this is something I want to get into, I want it to be because it's fun, because I'm passionate about it. I want to make sure I'm proud of everything that I do. So I went really slow, step by step, just to be like, am I cool with this? I am. This is fun. I should do it again sometime. All right, next step. So it was a long process, and I ended up really enjoying it every step of the way. It's just so much fun, and it's so liberating.
Now, were you always somebody that was pretty sex positive, or was that something you eventually grew into as the work continued?
I've always been sex positive, but I was slow getting into sex. Which, I mean, if you'd known me in high school, I would have been voted least likely to do porn when I grew up. Yeah, I didn't even have a boyfriend until I was 18. And the moment I lost my virginity, I went straight home and I was like, "So, Mom, I lost my virginity today." That happened. So I've always been super positive about the subject, but I was slow in exploring it myself.
So what made you like, so you said that you started off doing very simple stuff. You said you were doing glamour and then you did lingerie. So again, how do you go from, because we talked about, the contradictions where you're the shy girl who's acting and all like that. So how do you go from being the girl that wouldn't be somebody you would think of as getting into porn and then, getting into it the way that you did? Was it just that it was fun or like what was going on there?
Yeah, it's fun. I mean,
Just
I
fun.
have to make the distinction. I'm very socially awkward and shy, but physically I'm not shy at all. So, I mean, I can run around naked and not bat an eyelash, and that's fine. But if you want me to have a conversation with someone, I'm a lot more likely to stutter and blush and run out of things to say.
And did you were you with your fiance when you got started?
No, I was not. I was with my girlfriend at the time. And she was very against me getting into sex work, so I I didn't. I was just doing regular modeling, and then I was like, can I maybe do some nude artistic stuff? And she was like, yeah, I guess that's fine. And then we ended up breaking up, and I was with my – that was my second relationship. My third relationship, he was like, yeah, you can do nude modeling. I don't even care. And then – but it wasn't until I was with my current – my fourth relationship that I really, really got into sex work. So he supported me a lot.
And what was that conversation like? Like, you know, how did you break him, or how did you ease him into the idea that this was what you did?
I said, hey, I want to do this. And he said, all right. It's very easy.
Wow. And that's so interesting, because I would think that, you know, that's something I really wonder, you know, you always hear people say, like, I listen to Savage Love and I read columns like that. And, you know, you always hear these stories of people who are so tortured about it, where they're like, oh my God, what am I going to do? How am I going to tell them? And it just sounded so easy in your case.
I think part of it was A, I'd been surrounded by people who are in the industry, so I was kind of desensitized to all that. And B, I did it so slow because I wanted to make sure at each step that it was something I'm proud of. Mm. And if I'm proud of it, I don't really have a reason to hide it or be ashamed or anything like that.
I think it also helps that you were in control of it. You know, you hear these horror stories of these girls who get into the industry, and it just devours them. You know, they don't know what they're in for, and they do get in over their heads. And you know, you do hear these horror stories of them being. I remember if you're familiar with the star Belladonna, she did an interview with Diane Sawyer, and she was like, you know, I'd been in the industry so many months, and I was doing a gangbang, and it ruined her and all this stuff. And you know, I really admire your approach of knowing what you were getting into every step of the way and doing it for the right reasons, and that's a really good approach.
Having a mentor really helped with that too. Mm-hmm. And I mean, she ended up retiring because she felt like she was just becoming someone that she wasn't, catering to everyone else's fetishes instead of her own. And so she's like, I just need to take a step back from this and get back in touch with what's me. But it doesn't mean the industry is bad. It just means I'm a little burnt out. And so she helped lead me towards, you know, companies that treat their models well and all that. So I've only had positive experiences because I've worked with people who've been vetted by people I trust.
Mm-hmm. Do you still talk to your mentor? Does she still help you?
Oh, absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's very cool. And how does your family know? I assume they do.
Yes.
Okay. And how are they fine with it?
My mom is slowly becoming desensitized. I mean, it's one of those things where it does make her feel awkward, and she gets this look on her face like, oh God, we're talking about this. But at the same time, she's like, hey, if it makes you happy, I'm going to support you in it. And I couldn't ask for more than that. And the more I tell her stories about it, the less awkward she is. And I mean, it's reached a point where she's like, oh, hey, what if you do this, that, and this on your show? So, although, funny story, my sister's stepmom, she doesn't like me at all, and I'm not really sure why, but I guess she decided to try and research me. And so she found some nude pictures of me, and she told the family, and I guess she thought that she had, like, all this nasty dirt on me, and she was gonna, you know, like, get me in so much trouble, and my mom was just like, yeah, I know.
Isn't that great when people try to do that?
Oh, it's the best thing. And I always tell people, I mean, if you're going to get in this industry, you have to own it. Because if you're one of those people who's like, okay, I have to have a private Twitter account and no one can know, I mean, people are going to find out if you're on the internet.
Yeah.
And so I really don't think you should get into this kind of business unless you're okay with that.
Yeah.
You know, and I sat there and I thought about it, and I'm like, do I really want to be a preschool teacher? Not really. So, I mean, do I really want to work for a company that's going to blacklist me because I'm sex positive? Not really.
Yeah.
And it can affect you.
Yeah. I remember I worked at an adult bookstore for 3 years. I sold porn for a living, and we had to – one of the pre-qualifiers to getting the job is we had to sign up for a SOB license, it was called, and it stands for Sexually Oriented Business License. And I remember we had to go to City Hall and get it notarized and everything. And one of the things they said to us during the interview is that, you know, this could be on your public record. So if you're thinking of running for public office or anything, you may want to consider that if somebody really wanted to dig, they would see that at one point you had a sexually oriented business license. And, mm-hmm. and you know, we sort of had to ask ourselves that too, of, you know, do I plan on being a preschooler teacher. Do I plan on running for politics? No, then sign me up. And we'd have to get it renewed every year. And yeah, that was a thing too, where even something as innocuous as that, people could try and use it against you. I remember I went to my high school reunion a few years ago, and I hadn't worked at the porn store in years. And there was this woman there, and she felt the need to come for me. And she was like, "Do we really want somebody who sold porn for a living at our reunion?" And
Wow.
I was like, "If I remember correctly, you bought pipes from my store, so don't get pious with me." And it always just seems like the people who are, the first to throw stones are the ones who are guilty themselves. So.
Yeah. And I've been found out a couple times. First by my sister's stepmom, but then again by someone at our local game store. And that was great. He ran in. "Did you know someone here does porn?" So I'm pretty sure all the regulars at the local game store have seen me naked.
And they're okay with that? Like, that's been fine?
Yeah, I mean, they brought it up, and I mean, most of the people there are my friends, because, I mean,
Okay.
I'm a regular there, and they're all like, "Yeah, so." And the people who didn't know were just kind of like, "What? That's a thing?" But because we were all so laid back about it, like, it wasn't a big deal.
Yeah, it took away some of the mystique then because there was nothing scandalous about it. It was just so, whatever, it's just Kat, you know?
Yeah.
So, one of the things I also admire about you, Kat, is that you seem to do this independently. Like, you seem to run your own business. Is that true?
Yes.
Okay, and how does this operate? Like, walk me through, a day or a week in your life. Like, how do you do this?
I think I'm technically considered an independent contractor.
Okay.
I've worked for a couple different sites, but my favorites are Kink Live. Yeah, pretty much just Kink Live. So I decide my own work week. I basically base my work week off of my fiance's work schedule, because he has a really wonky work schedule, and I'd much rather be on the same, free time and sleep schedule as him, because then we get to spend our time together.
Sure.
So when he's at work, I'll decide if I want to work that
Okay.
day or not. And I'll log on, I'll tweet at my followers, "Hey guys, I'm doing a show, come join me." And I'm also registered as a submissive slash masochist for kink.com. So every once in a while, they'll send me an email and like, "Hey, do you want to come shoot this video in a few weeks?" So,
Oh, wow.
yeah, that's fun.
So now, if you're recording at home, do you have a studio at home or do you just do it out of your room?
I do have a makeshift studio
Okay.
in my house.
Okay.
It's not the coolest thing in the world. It has some lights. It has a bed. It has a curtain behind the bed so that it's not just my plain white boring wall. I've got all my toys, my lube, everything you need. Oh,
And you do enjoy what you do.
I love it. It's so
Okay.
much fun.
Okay. And so I'm just trying to understand now if you're in a very interesting position because I really feel like you mentioned earlier that you like getting to know people and you like getting inside of their heads and your work seems very personal. Like you get to know their fantasies, you take requests. I think one of the things people can do is you write stories if they ask you, right? Okay. And you're really finding out what makes people tick.
Oh, yeah.
So what have you learned about people in your years doing this? Like anything interesting that you didn't before?
I have learned to be so open-minded towards so many different fetishes that I didn't even know existed. I mean, at this point in my life, you can come to me and tell me you're into anything, and I'd be like, "Cool." My only thing is, if you act on it, keep it safe, sane, consensual, and legal. But
Absolutely.
as far as what's in your head, I mean, rock it. I've engaged in cannibalism fetishes. One of my favorite clients of all time has a seatbelt fetish.
A seatbelt fetish. What is that?
Yeah, he's turned on by, wearing seatbelts and also airbag deployments. I've written several stories about girls who get turned on by wearing their seatbelt, and they start masturbating, and then they get into a car accident right when they hit orgasm, and then they're
I think there's
fine.
a
And
movie about that.
is there?
Yeah, I think it's called Crash with
I need to
James
check that out,
Spader.
because I totally never knew that that was a thing. And but he's so great because, he's humorous, so I get to add some humor in there, and there's such weird, strange fetishes that are just interesting once you get to know the person and the mentality behind them.
I discovered one today on Gawker. There was a story about people, guys specifically, who will buy very expensive pairs of tennis shoes and then they will destroy them. So
Yeah.
they'll cover them in like pudding or ketchup or they'll
Oh,
burn
yeah.
them. And there's some weird like eroticism there, which I don't personally get, but God bless them. And yeah, that was something I'd never heard of either, where I'm like, huh, we're masturbating in destroyed shoes now. Okay.
Yeah, I don't always relate to it, but damn it, you rock it. I did a super fun custom for someone where we got in a pool and we played rock, paper, scissors, and whoever lost would get some sort of food thing poured on them, like, you know, ketchup or cake batter or something. And it was so fun. Like, I wasn't, like, soaking my panties or anything, but, I mean, we had fun just pouring stuff on each other and rolling around in the pool and slipping and sliding, and there's still cake batter on my ceiling from this shoot.
I think that's the one thing I took away from my years at the porn store, because people would always ask me questions like, oh, what was it like? And were there all these weirdos there? The one thing I took away from my years in the porn store is that we're all freaks.
Oh,
and
yeah.
We're all weird. And, you know, and God bless it. You know, I remember going into the store when I first started working there, and I would try to find the weirdest people, or I would play the game of, I can't believe somebody's into that. And the longer I worked there, you know, I would see people who I wouldn't expect to be in a place like that. You know, I would have that image of what a porn store customer looked like. But then once you'd see what they'd bring to the register, we're all into something. And,
oh,
and I
totally.
Feel like the world would just be a better place if we all admitted it, and we all – there's a solidarity there that I wish we had more of.
Mm-hmm.
Because I feel like there is so much pretense, and there are people who go out the back door and ask you to destroy the box when you're done. And, you know, it used to kill me when I would see people who would be, oh, I hope nobody sees me in the porn store. I would say to them, well, they're in the porn store too, so
right,
and you know, we really are just all in this together. And I actually, for a time, I thought about getting into like sexual psychiatry or like Dr. Ruth or something like that, just because I wanted to make people feel normal, because there are so many people out there who are convinced that they have the weirdest fetish. I remember my last boyfriend, when we started dating, it was so funny. He said he had to confess something to me, and mind you, I've already told him that I'm a trans woman, so he's fine with that. And I remember we were just laying in bed one day, and he's like, I'm trying to imagine what it could be. So I'm like, okay, do you like to be spanked? Do you like, look, I'm going through my Rolodex, and he's like, I'm really into butts.
Oh, that's so cute.
And I was like, that's it? Like, so you like, I got a butt. That's fine. We can do this. And I'm thinking it's going to be something really out there. And he's like, yeah, my last girlfriend, she wouldn't let me touch it or look at it or anything. And I'm like, it's just a butt. Like, what, you know, and, but he was so programmed to think that little thing was wrong and bad. And I was just like, enjoy the butt. Sure. You know, if that's all it is, you know, or, you know, I just, but again, people are so, you know, they're told that these things are bad and wrong, and we're all okay. Like you said, as long as it's safe and consensual, and I'm totally down, and I just wish more people were.
So. Yeah, and I love being able to provide that safe place for people.
Yeah.
And I get so many who are afraid to tell me, and I'm like, dude, this is what I do. Mm-hmm. Like, I get off on getting you off.
Yeah.
So whatever it is.
I think people underestimate the level of communication that goes into, you know, your career. And, you know, sometimes you see that with exotic dancers too, where I had a friend mm-hmm. who was a dancer, and she would say to me, she was like, Aaron, I make most of my money just talking to them.
Yeah.
And that sounded so, I didn't really believe her at first, but I remember I went to a couple clubs myself, and it really was just being there for somebody and the gift of gab and forming that connection. And it's not a connection that most people would recognize. Like, they would think it was strange or it wasn't to build, but you are building a connection of some kind.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And I used to experience that even at the porn store. You know, you would see these people come in and they would say, I'm into this. Is there anything out there? Yes, here's a movie. Here's a magazine. you are just fine. And watching that person's face, like, hey, I'm not so bad after
I'm
all.
I'm accepted.
Yeah. I get it completely. And even as a person, you know, I don't know if you've experienced this, but, you know, the personal growth of being in the business, finding out about yourself. I remember when I first started working at the porn store, I had just come to terms with the fact that I was trans. And I went through a point where I was like, is anybody going to love me? Like, who's going to love a girl with a penis, essentially? But seeing people rent my movies and watch the magazines really kind of made me feel better about myself. I don't know mm-hmm. If you've gained any confidence through what you do, but it really helped me too.
I've learned a lot about myself through this work. Mm-hmm. You know, I've become interested in things I never thought I would be interested in just because I tried it. And I was like, wow, this is really good. Wow. Mm-hmm. So yeah, 100%, absolutely.
It also must feel really good to sort of be running your own show.
Yeah, it's fun.
Yeah. mean, you are your own boss. That's a, and you're in, and like I said, you're in control, which feels really good. So,
Yes.
yeah. So one of the things you said to me that I found really interesting, you mentioned the fact that you have an exit plan and
Yes.
that, you know, you don't see yourself doing this forever.
I mean, eventually I'm going to get old and wrinkly, and while I have seen some, hot 75 women making a living on webcams, I realize that it's something I may not be able to make a living off of my entire life. And to that end, I study dog training and animal behavior so that when I do retire from this industry, that's something that I can smoothly get into. And I do a lot of work with the rescue group, so, I have references and all of that.
I meant to ask you, do you find that your gaming and your job intersect at all? Like, are there skills that you've learned at one that maybe you apply to the other?
Sometimes they understand. I love my nerdy clients. It's so much easier for me to talk to them because there are so many different things that we can relate on. And so it's just right away, there's a click. There's a certain way that nerds communicate with each other. We have our own language. And it's really easy to recognize that. When a nerd comes in my room, I'm like, you and I, we are going to be friends.
Is that important to you to, you know, to reasonably like the people that you're working for? Or have there been people where you're like, I don't really care for you, but meh.
It does make it a lot more fun. I mean, it's. And I feel like my client can feel it too if I'm into it, So the more we connect, the more we click, the more we have that good chemistry, the more fun the session's going to be for both of us.
Now, overwhelmingly, it sounds like, you know, what you do is very positive and you really enjoy what you do. Have there been any negative experiences or any downfalls of what you do?
Not really, no. I've been very lucky in that I've had tons and tons and tons of good experiences. I had one bad experience during a shoot where it was supposed to be a no mark shoot, so I wasn't supposed to get all marked up, and I ended up getting scarred. It was just skin scarring, but the company was really good about it. I mean, they sent me to the doctor. They paid me because they knew like I wouldn't be able to get work until it healed. So they took care of it, and I still work with that company because I mean it's hard when you're working with a submissive for the first time, and everyone's bodies are so differently. You don't always know how easy someone is going to mark.
Right. Yeah. But you've never had any like negative experiences with clients maybe getting obsessed with you or too interested or anything like that.
No, I've had
Okay.
some really super awesome clients. I love my clients.
Awesome. And again, like I said, that's just, you know, you hear these stories of, you know, the person who won't leave you alone and they're trying to get all of your time and just ugh, so.
I'm really firm with my clients. If they start stepping out of bounds, I speak up right away and I shut it down.
Very cool. Very cool. So, you know, in response or in regards to this exit plan that you have, is there anything that you'd like to achieve in porn before you quit, or do you think you could really just quit at any time and be fine with it?
I could probably just quit at any time and be fine with it. I tend to be a really whimsical and impulsive person. So I do whatever is fun at the time. And if I get bored, I move on.
Interesting. So one other thing I've noticed is that you're interested in Kat is you're into cosplay. I see that you have a friend and you have like a joint Twitter account or something.
Yeah.
Okay, so how did you get into cosplay? Like, what started that?
Well, I tried to cosplay for the first time in 7th grade. I was this character named Ichigo from Tokyo Mew Mew, and she's a magical girl, and she turns into a cat girl, which to me is just the best thing ever. And I couldn't sew or anything though. So I basically spray painted my hair pink, and I got a pair of cat ears and a tail. And instead of wearing her magical girl outfit, I decided I was going to wear her work outfit, which was essentially a maid costume. So I show up to school like this,
Seventh grade.
7th grade, and everyone and their mother was just like, "Oh, you're a naughty maid," and I was super innocent at the time, so I was like, "I'm a what? No, I'm a superhero."
In seventh grade.
My friends and I, because there are five characters in that series, all of which were just a different animal, and we all wore our maid outfits and spray painted our hair, and we went out trick or treating like that, and it was, oh, look at all the little maids. We're like, no, we're superheroes. It was very frustrating.
Are there like any cosplay like role models that you have or people you look up to?
Yaya Han, I guess. I found her on DeviantArt before I saw her anywhere else, and this Jessica Rabbit costume that she made, and just the craftsmanship that went into that costume is amazing to me. I mean, she went so far as to make sure that her body had that cartoony appearance, and her makeup had that cartoony appearance, and it was so intricate and so well done to me. I started looking at all of her other costumes, and she's just an amazing craftsperson.
Do you follow Christine Sprinkle at all?
I do, yes.
Yeah.
I definitely have a Twitter crush on her.
Yeah, she's super lovely and she works really, really hard at what she does. And she's definitely one of the people who I always point people to when they say that they're interested in cosplay. It's like, go see my friend Christine. She's got her
Yes.
game pretty on lock, so.
Yeah, no, she's super cute and her work is amazing.
Yeah. Are there any projects you're working on next with regards to cosplay?
Currently, we are working on Riku and Yuna from Final Fantasy X. Final Fantasy X.
You know, I always tell myself I'm going to get into cosplay, but then I realize I have no artistic ability.
You know what? I don't either. I've tried to learn how to use a sewing machine, and I just can't. It was so bad in college. I ended up being on costume crew for a musical, and this musical had 80 people in it. And my friend was like, "Let's sign up for costume crew." And I'm like, "I can't costume. Like, what?" She goes, "No, it's fine. I'll show you how to do everything." I was like, "All right." So everyone quit costume crew but me. So I'm alone on costume crew in an 80-person musical. It's cabaret, by the way. So lots of costume changes. And I don't know how to use a sewing machine. And so I would sit in the back room all day long watching Star Wars and Ferngully and everything and just hand stitch everything super slowly. It was so bad. And so I thought I would never be able to get into cosplay at all, but my roommate is super amazing and she can use a sewing machine. So we make a good team.
I also have this really bad habit of picking very difficult cosplays. So, like, when I first decided I wanted to cosplay, this was when Return to Ravnica Block had just come out, and I got the idea that I wanted to be Exava.
Ooh.
But the helm alone has eight horns,
Yeah.
not to mention the chains, the banners hanging off the things. And I remember I had my friend Sonia on the show, who's also very good at cosplay, and it was so funny because she was trying to make it seem so harmless. And she's from the Netherlands, I believe. And she was like, "Oh, well, the bra is only checkered. We can do that very easily." And I'm like, "Okay, so get a bra. What's next?" And she's like, "Well, you need to put the checkers on the bra." And I'm like, "Find the checkers? Where do I?" And I'm like, "Wait a minute, back up. Where do I even find checkers?" Like, I'm just having to, like, she would go two steps forward and I would go one step back. So she'd be like, "Then you apply the checkers." And I'm like, "How do you apply? Fuck." And yeah, so I need to pick something just very simple where it's like, just give me a tunic, something that's very basic, because I keep shooting really high. Then I got the idea I was going to be Ashiok one day, and I'm like,
Ooh.
how do I make a smoke head? Damn it. So I need to aim a little lower.
Well, there's cosplay.com actually has a really good community for people who are trying to get into cosplay as far as how to make things. You can post, "Hey, I'm trying to make this and I don't know what I'm doing." And a lot of people will be like, "Oh, well, here, like this. Here's a tutorial, blah, 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 blah." I got really lucky in my roommate because when I asked her if we could form a cosplay team, she's like, "Yeah, that'd be super fun." And I showed her this picture of a humanized style of Mew and Mewtwo. Made by General Cowslip on Tumblr. And it's just this very extravagant, Eastern styled costumes. And I was like, "Do you think it would be possible for us to make this?" And she goes, "Heck yes!" And that was the last thing I expected her to say. So we did that.
Yeah, I think you need to point me to the forums where I can just throw cash at somebody and they make it for me. Where's that
You
board?
can
Where
do
do
that
I?
on cosplay.com too.
Really?
Yeah, there are commission boards and
Yeah,
commission
that's
reviews for the commissioners. So.
interesting. Yeah, that's my alley. That's one of those things where it's like, I'll give you $200, you make me look pretty. How about that?
Yes.
There we go. So, Kat, where do you see yourself in the next few years? Like, where would you like to be? Where do you see your career going? What's going on?
Ultimately, I would like to be in a larger house, one that can fit all of the animals that I have. Mainly so that I can foster more. Currently, I only foster cats. I would also like to foster dogs, and possibly even dog sit. So basically, I want a bigger house because animals. I'd like a better studio, and I would like a sewing room, maybe a game room. I have big plans for a big house. Career-wise, I'm really happy with what I'm doing, and in a few years, I still see myself doing it. Or, I mean, ideally, I become a famous cosplayer, and someone goes, "Hey, I want to be in a movie." That'd be cool. But I mean, realistically, I see myself continuing on with my sex work because it's something that I just really enjoy doing, and it's exactly where I want to be right now.
And that's what counts.
Exactly. And I mean, now I'll be married in a few years, so there's that too.
You seem like somebody who you do enjoy being in a relationship.
I do.
Yeah.
I do. I enjoy being in good relationships.
That really is important, though. Like,
It is.
it's funny that we laugh at that, but when I think about it, I know so many people who are in relationships just to be in them or just to not feel alone.
And see, I'm really happy single.
Yeah.
I get along just fine when I'm not in a relationship. And when I met my fiance, I was not interested in a boyfriend at all. And I told him several times that I wasn't looking for a boyfriend and nothing was going to happen. Now look.
But see, I think that's the secret, though. I think that's the time to get in a relationship is when you don't need one.
Oh yeah.
Because when you're not afraid of being alone, you will put up with less. You know what I mean? And I think that's very important.
And that's what happened with me and my ex-girlfriend was that she just was afraid of being alone. And I told her, you need to learn to love yourself before you can do anything else.
As the great RuPaul says, how can you, if you can't love yourself, how in the hell are you going to love somebody else?
Exactly.
So, Kat, if anybody's enjoyed listening to you on the show, where can they find you? How can they get a hold of you?
You can find me on Twitter at Kitty Curiosity. That's actually the main area where I'm the most active, so that'd be the most likely place. You can also find me on FetLife. You can search my stage name, Kat Nomia, and I'll pop up.
So will someone else.
That's the idea.
And Catanomia, where does that come from?
So my nickname has been Kat for a very long time. It started in middle school when all my friends were Asian in middle school, and one of them decided that she was going to call me Neko, which is Japanese for cat. And then when I got into high school, this girl was like, "No, I'm going to call you Kat," and it just stuck. So I was then Kat, and then I started spelling it Katt, which is the Norwegian way to spell it, mainly because of my fascination with Scandinavian mythology and history. And Anomia came from a poem that a friend of mine, who's a very talented writer, wrote for my birthday. And one of the lines was, she called herself Anomia, and it stuck with me.
Well, Kat, you have been super lovely to talk to, you're everything I thought you would be, and I will support you any way that I can. I hope my
Oh, thank
listeners do as
you.
well, and I wish you continued luck in whatever you do, and you should keep in touch with me.
Yes, 100%. Thank you so much.
Cool. And if anybody's enjoyed what you've heard here on the Deck Tees, you can always find the show first and foremost on gatheringmagic.com. The show is on iTunes and Stitcher Radio. Please subscribe and leave me a review and some stars. You can keep up with the show on Twitter at the Deck Tees. You can keep up with me on Twitter at Original Estrus. And you can email the show at thedecktees@gmail.com. Thank you all so much for listening, and please take care of yourselves, okay? Bye.
Bye.